This is a production of Cornell University.
Cool. Saeed Alakhan?
Here.
Sarah Bailick?
Here.
Gianna Batista?
Here.
Amina Bahardi?
Here.
Jeff Block?
Here.
Enrico Bonatti?
Present.
Forgive me on the names. Inge Chen? Inga Chen? Todd Drucker? Rihanna Ganinski, Ian Harris, Matthew Henderson, Thomas Hittinger, Javon Hudson, Lisa Liu, Melissa, Seth Lutzik, Yura Ma, Lily, thank you, Nick Maletti, Adrian Murphy, Ulysses Smith, I know. Matt Stefanko, Thaddeus Talbot, Brandon Thompson, Noah Tulski, Nicholas Vasco, Lindsay Warshaw, Alex Zhu. No? Great. Thank you.
Great. So moving on, we're going to go into approval of the minutes. First is going to be so there's been a motion to approve this in section 30%. Seeing that the minutes from December 5th are approved, approval of the December 6th minutes was a fun second meeting of the week. There's been a motion to approve this in section 8%. Seeing that those are the motions. FYI, just so you know, we don't have a vote here today, so you could kind of be wary of how fast you speak. Or what your point is, just so we can make sure that we take it all down. And don't worry, we'll get to introductions in a minute. I'm just going to give your open microphone a little bit. All right, so next is open microphone.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm glad to see that there's about to be in the audience on this whole day. So would any of you like to come forward and address the assembly with something that is not currently on our agenda? Seeing none, open microphone is now closed.
Great, so announcements and reports. First, we're going to go through office intros. So first, I'd like to recognize Brian B. Brian. Murphy, come on, stand up. I'm just kidding. he's our new clerk. He's going to be replacing Chelsea this semester. So please, we introduced Inga at the last meeting, but some of you weren't there. So Inga Chen is the new minority liaison at large. She will be replacing Cameron Pritchett. So welcome again, Inga. Welcome back, Thomas Hittinger. Woo-hoo, good to see you. Gina, just in case you guys, I know we went through this, but Gina, Gina, so who's been playing. Well, I got my 2 flat tires now. She's the replacement for Ari, so she's been holding down the office of the assemblies. In addition to that, Amy Edwards is no longer in the office of the assemblies. She's moved upstairs. It is imperative now that we give you deadlines and things like that you actually do things on time and try to make this as easy as possible because we are down one person, so a lot of the administrative stuff now falls on the theoretical. There's not that third person there to help anymore. So when it comes to room scheduling, all like school ordering, food reading, making sure your budgets are intact, please rely on the exec board members, myself, Jim, Sarah, Judith, and Gina, if it comes to that, if you need something from the office. Melissa, hand over to you for internal operations announcement.
So as you guys saw my email from the other day, after the student assembly meeting, we'll have a short internal elective for the appropriations committee position that is now open due to Cameron Pritchett leaving the SA. And then also, if anyone is interested in an outdoor IOC liaison position, we welcome to get all the
just so you guys know, we need that that liaison position filled in with your roles. Still has to be moving into speed, which we will be discussing at upcoming retreat that I'm actually going to give to EPP ballots to discuss just.
So this is not the agenda, but I did email you about it on February 1st. We are confirmed to have a student assembly members retreat. Meeting will be in a room on the second campus, doing some team building exercise, exercises, going over the basics of being a member of the student assembly.
It's a semester.
We're going into the semester to get prepared for everything.
Okay,
so
but
this is
all
constituencies. The university has now started the Inclusive Excellence Academy, something that is coming from the Office of Workforce, Diversity and Inclusion, in conjunction with the University and University Council. And it's going to be a series of different things for all the different constituencies on campus, meaning undergraduate students, graduate students, faculty, staff, and community. One of the first things that they're doing now that is actually open to undergraduates is the planning accessible events thing. So I did distribute that email blast. That's great from that office. So I please be sure that share with other organizations. But please share with individual students because it is something that I think a lot of you can benefit from. A lot of us to benefit from. Great. Any other announcements that missed the agenda to have time? Good. Great. So we're going to move right on into business of the day. Resolution 47, approval of the 2014 Standing Rules, Senate Act, and Parliamentarian Burger, if you can vote, go ask the sponsors for this resolution. And join me if you want to give your further speech to your
our normal rules today. Feel free to take out your computers and other electronic devices and take a peek at the agenda that I emailed you yesterday. There's a lot of transition happening in the Office of the Assembly, so bear with us. The resolution didn't actually make it in the printed version of the agenda today, but it's very similar to the standing rules that we approved in August with just a few changes.
Jordan, if you want to just let everybody know what you said about this voting.
Approval of the 2014 standing rules is an internal policy resolution and will require a majority vote of the NSA members.
Great. So just so everybody's clear, it's a simple majority vote, the same way we did at the beginning of last semester. So this item will be finished at 5:30, for 30 minutes on the agenda, and then we'll move on, so take it. Do you have a question? Oh, you want to make some? All right, go for it.
Yeah, well, basically the body of the resolution is that to just approve the rules that we have, and it's not coming from the council, so I'll give these. The basics that you need to know when you're looking through the document itself. Everything that it has strike through has been moved in our new version of the standing rules, and everything in italics is something that we've added. Does anyone have any questions about that?
I was wondering, since I see that changes are not very many, if you could just go quickly through the various changes and then explain the reasoning behind the
give us 1 minute. We'll pull that document up. Does everyone have a copy of the resolution in front of them at this point? Yes. Sorry, give us 1 minute.
It should have been before. I remember a couple of them on the top of my head.
Yeah, we're going to just go through the document that Jordan has on the computer. We're just looking for it, and we're just going to go in order to make things easier for everyone. So the first change was to Rule 3 of Section 1.
So my reasoning for changing the wording on this and to make it a little bit more severe, I guess, is that sometimes people like to throw out suspending the rules more often than they need to be thrown out, and I think that we have rules in place for a reason, and that whenever we're going to take the time to disqualify the rules or to suspend them, that we should make sure that we're really taking the time to think about it and not just what we want to discuss to go faster. So I think it's important that the chair, who's supposed to be kind of unbiased on any issue, really does take an opportunity to either recognize it or not recognize it, because they want us to keep order for the meeting.
So wouldn't that kind of impair the...
I want them to go through all the changes first, and then we'll go into those changes.
Okay, so our next change is to Rule 6. So that includes interviews for employment as a valid excuse for missing assembly meetings, and also any excuses for missing a meeting must be sent to the Vice President of Internal Operations, meaning Melissa, at least 24 hours prior to the meeting, even if it's something that normally would be excused unless it's extenuating circumstances and you don't notify in less than 24 hours before, that is still unexcused. Right? Okay. The next thing we did was scratch Rule 7, just because it was a little redundant and we addressed those issues throughout the document in other places. Does anyone want to hear the more reasoning for that? Nope? Okay, yes. And then the next change was to Section 2, Rule 1. Now the rule reads, the agenda for any informal meeting shall not contain legislation unless they are held in lieu of a regular Thursday meeting or meet a deadline. We have been having meetings to meet a deadline in the past with legislation, and it just never was in the standing rules, so that's why we added it. And that's it.
So very minor changes to the rules for the most part. So we're going to open these up to this upright versus the person of the last time.
Yeah, okay, so I have a few questions. I can start with the last one, changing the informal meeting. I see this as a potential danger if we just leave it like that. Maybe we can add something more like this meeting, since now it can approve the legislation, it should have a certain percentage of SA members present, and it should be scheduled with a certain, at least, let's say, a few days earlier, a certain number of days earlier, of course, and you got to certain people that are meeting, so the day one, and creating a meeting or something like that. Secondly,
can I respond to that?
All right.
I think that it will be a problem because in order to work on legislation, we have to have a quorum. So if we don't have enough members of SA present, then we wouldn't be addressing legislation anyways.
Okay.
And the 72 hours of notice would still hold, even if we were trying to meet a deadline. We would at least before, with the last meeting, we weren't sure if we were going to have to need the extra meeting, but we called it anyways just in case, and that same protocol would need to happen.
Okay. Secondly, with the rest to Rule 6, Section 1, the 24-hour clause, what if someone, falls sick in less than 24 hours, they can't predict they're going to be sick the day after, so how does it work?
Yeah, Yeah, that's why I said extenuating circumstances. In a case where there is some sort of emergency and you can't attend the meeting, you obviously will not know that happened 24 hours under normal circumstances. If you know that you will not be able to make a student assembly meeting for something like a job interview or a club fair or something, you need to let Melissa know 24 hours in advance, unless it's something that you wouldn't know about 24 hours in advance. So
There's a line afterwards that talks about the discretion of the executive board, and that's why we did that. I'll tell you, additionally, the reason that was set up to be priority is for the same, like the last meeting we had. We need to know ahead of time whether or not we're going to have quorum, and this just makes it a lot easier. Otherwise, like, we don't have quorum, we actually can't do anything. So it just helps us as an executive board together, so we know what we can do, what exactly we can do to tackle that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see the line that you mentioned. It's not even italicized with regards to recent circumstances.
That exact language wasn't in there. It's the language that is in there is any excuses made after this period are up to the discretion of the executive committee. And basically what that means is that the executive committee tends to have reasonable people on it, and if there is something that would be considered an extenuating circumstance, such as falling ill, having to go home for a family emergency with very short notice. Those are the kind of things that would be at the discretion of the executive committee to approve whether they are excused or not excused.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rule 6 would benefit from clear language, such as certain scenarios instead of like a description of some people. And lastly, just I didn't understand very well. I was hoping you could explain Rule 3 a bit better. What is the difference between before and after? Now we need the president, the chair, to approve a certain request.
All motions must be recognized by the chair in order to happen anyway. So the language is maybe a little formal, but nothing really changed here. All that it's saying is that in order to suspend the rules during a meeting, you would have the motion to suspend the rules. Ulysses would recognize that you made that motion, and then the student assembly members would vote by two-thirds. And then if they vote in favor of that motion, then we can suspend the rules. It's just a clarification that, you know, we can't just motion to suspend the rules whenever we want. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
It's time to read those over. We want to the next speaker who's actually speaking.
Hi,
everyone.
Just a quick comment for everyone here. If you're going to change legislation that we have, please do not italicize things. It is very hard for me to italics here. Please use track changes saying, like, I do not have great eyesight, you know, now you're asking me to put these italics. Other than that, these are pretty simple changes, so let's just pass this for things that we actually have to debate today. So I'm going to call a question on that, but no more italics. I call a question.
Seeing notice that we're going to go into just a simple packet of this, again, it's only requires that we're going to go, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Yeah, I'm sorry, hand raised over the clock for a second or so. All in favor of passing the standing rules for this semester, please raise your hand. And you're going to hold it high and hold it steady. All those opposed? All those who abstain? By vote of 22-0-0, the standing rules for this semester have been passed. Great, we're going to move right along to old business, Resolution 19, encouraging community standards and accountability. Representative Spatz, he's sponsoring the resolution. Obviously, we come up, if anyone wants to speak on the resolution, we also come up on it. join with if you want to.
Encouraging community standards and accountability is a recommendation. It will require a majority vote of SA members present to pass. Because this is a recommendation, the community is entitled to two collective votes. Both community votes will be allocated to whichever side has a collective majority.
Thank you. Alright, so just so everybody again is clear, we are voting the community clause on this one because it is a recommendation, so that means the audience does have the right to vote to two collective votes on this. Okay. Former representation of the audience. How are you doing? Alright, next. we're going to give you a couple minutes to present again, and then we'll go both of the speakers list. So if you want to get on the speakers list, go for it. I'll give you 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Does that sound good?
Yeah. Hi everyone, welcome back. It's nice to see all your faces and finally have this resolution on the docket as business of the day. Just a couple things to point out again, just topics that we discussed from our viewpoint, that this is a recommendation to the university to document incidents for community standards. So what happened with the single day after break incident when we posted on the group's conduct webpage. And that would also require that members of the Cornell community be using Respect at Cornell. This is by no means a way to chastise a department, but rather to create a transparent and safe community that holds one another accountable. It's a website that people go to if they're interested in joining a group on campus and they want to learn more about it. So this would be a way for members of the Cornell community to understand what happened in the past. It's not something that's blatantly put in people's faces and publicized obnoxiously. Yeah. And so I think that it's really important that we discuss this resolution today. And do you have any other questions?
Just a couple of new things. New questions come up. So the GTSA is currently working on a very similar resolution that they're going to put in their assembly in the coming days. Additionally, the group is not website has also been updated to include not just the lacrosse incident, but also incidents by two fraternities on campus, one for alcohol, one for hazing. If you guys are, I know there was concern previously about use of the website as being just one incident and whether it was truly going to be used, and so we see a track record here of use of this website by the university.
Hi everyone, my name is Gabrielle Lopez, and I'm a member of this meeting. And just to echo Juliana, this resolution will really provide a path to hold an organization accountable. I was talking a couple of days ago with a friend of mine, Rebecca, who filed a bias report upon, the hosting group today. Incident and never got a response back at all, never, since September. And so this resolution will really provide a path so that this doesn't happen anymore. Let's hold organizations accountable. Let's install this preventative measure so that we don't have to have students wondering what's going to happen in 20 seconds. That's it for me.
Really quickly, we did review the Respect at Cornell program. We thought it was a really great overview of harassment and a great tool to provide a baseline for everyone or the faculty so that way that they know what harassment is and there wouldn't be any kind of this communication miscarriage about it. So.
Great. Perfect. That's fine. All right. So first on the speaker's list is going to be EVP Beth.
I'm very glad that you added that little bit at the end, because that was what I was going to ask. Now my only question for you guys is, could you explain a little bit more, did you look into other options going into perspective for now, why do you think that one is the most beneficial? Otherwise, I think your heart's in the right place on this one, and I think it's a very good resolution.
Well, to start off, Respect at Cornell is a program that is already made, so resources to put it in place or to generate another program wouldn't be so necessary, seeing as there's something that can be expanded rather than created entirely. And so we think that space, how it functions.
And just for refreshing last semester, I think we had this question from last semester. It's an online course. It's something you can do in your own time. It's something that already exists. It's the fact that it already exists and that it's easy to do.
Just wondering, I also know that part of the revenue is to revisit all the existing programs. So that's why I'm asking.
Next is VP Block.
So Representative Batista mentioned that this program would be very easy to implement. I have no doubt about that. But I also think that the ease of implementation should not be a determinant on what's the most effective process. I signed up for this program this week and I couldn't find student assignment, so I signed up as a staff member. And I have to say, I found this to be very effective. Have all of you now taken Inspector Cornell? Okay, great. I really, Representative Batista, to come here and say that people book to this website before joining the club. Let's be honest, no one does that. I think that this is a very easy way for the students, something to come out and say that we did something about this. I don't think we're actually accomplishing very much. Who's really learning much from an online program where you sit passively with videos? Who's, if anyone, is going to this website to see it? Which clubs recently got put on this list? I think that this is, again, as you said, an easy way to look at this problem, and I also think that the scope of this is completely incorrect. Now we're seeing that all graduate TAs are required to be inspected. Why not undergraduate TAs? Why not all professors? Why simply staff and graduate TAs? I don't really understand the large scope of this problem, of the solution here today. Having taken this class, I think it's kind of a waste of time, quite frankly. And I feel, I don't want you to come off as saying that I don't understand the problems that existed with the way that athletic standards was. There's no doubt about it, saying that having a coach should be, I believe it was the phrase they were using. That should not occur, and I think that we should take a stand against this. But I think that, again, as Representative Batista characterized this, this is the easy way to go out. I don't think it's the effective one.
I think there was a miscommunication of what I said by easy. I said it's easy to take respect at Cornell. I'm not saying that putting something on group misconduct webpage is an easy thing to do. As we've seen in the past couple of weeks, the Latino Living Center, as well as the Latino Studies Program, have done a lot of things to work on the image that has been portrayed working with athletics behind the scenes that we haven't seen in this meeting at the Student Assembly. So I actually think you're correct in that. And what this resolution is going to do is an institutional way for people to see what's happening on campus. And this group is on the page is something that is new that's being started. It's something that is actually gathering a bunch of us, as we've seen in the past couple of weeks. It's a way to actually formally recognize what's happened beyond the educational components, the components within the community that pertain to those educational programs.
I'd also like to mention that probably the most ineffective way to handle this situation would be not to do anything. The ineffective way would have been for us to just let the athletics department apologize and that's it. Rather than attempt at bringing a new approach as to how to prevent these types of issues. And just as a point of clarification, graduate TAs were included in the resolution, and there was no mention for undergrad TAs because they are students. And so they fall within that category without having to explicitly label them as undergrad TAs.
Great. So we're going to come to this next
I think the work that you guys have done is fantastic. I think the work that you guys have done is fantastic. I'm just a little confused that if this resolution, which I think it was originally stemmed out of the athletics incident, why, and I think this may be echoing what Vice President Ballard was saying, why respect at Cornell? Because it doesn't seem respect at Cornell is really addressing the issue that occurred with the athletics department. And then additionally, have you guys in the past few months been speaking with the university diversity officers and Vice President Murphy's office to get any updates on whether there has been any progress within the athletics department?
Well, Respect at Cornell deals with basically Title IX, everything that has to do with harassment and discrimination. And ultimately, the incident we had with the athletics department was an incident of discrimination. And that is why it would fit into that category. Furthermore, we have not been able to get any explicit updates because there's a certain nature of policies that prevent us from knowing exactly what it is that the SOS Army has done, the steps that they have taken. All we know is that we have the apology and that they have taken steps. That is the only thing BP working told us, they have taken steps to correct this and to prevent it from happening in the future.
Next on speakers list is Representative.
Hi, so I'd like to say firstly that, being that we've discussed this a number of times, that, I wanted to preface it by saying that we empathize with, the pain and suffering that was a result of the incidents initially. But I do want to emphasize, most importantly, something we talked about during this specific meeting, that unlike the, author of this comic website right now, unlike the lacrosse teams and the fraternities, I do not believe that this student group was inherently malicious in their actions. And also, unlike those other offenses, the lacrosse team, for instance, in hazing their younger members was not approved by administration. Unlike Ezra's Army was in caring for this themed idea. So I believe that it was poorly executed, but I also believe that a lot of what has been done already in initiating conversations both here and with administration is taking steps that are necessary to make increased awareness of what happened, how it should never happen again. I do not believe, I will vote no, so long as lines 29 and 30 are on this document, because I believe that it is not fair to that group, given that they were not doing this maliciously, and I do not believe that a student group should be reprimanded in this way. I think that the most effective use of this resolution is simply to delineate how to prevent events like this from occurring. But I do not believe that this was seriously malicious intention, and that is what I would like to emphasize. Otherwise, I do like the theme, and I do like the intention of where you guys are coming from in authoring this resolution.
Before I move on to the next person, let me just clarify this. We had this talk at one point, and I think we touched on this at one meeting, so we clarify this for everyone. The line that you're referring to, the way the language reads, it might be a little confusing, but it's asking to document the incident that involved that student group. I think what would actually be documented would be put on athletics as a unit, not the student organization, which technically is not a student organization, just so we're all clear, because that was a distinction. It's not a student organization that exists.
Okay, in that case, would we be able to clarify that, or just make sure that that will, in fact, be reflected?
You can certainly motion to that. If you choose.
I don't necessarily feel comfortable offering language this, but I would like to request simply that you clarify the language in that sort of specific section.
Next on here is this interruption.
Simply mentioning, you're saying involving as an arm, but simply documenting as, under athletics, something to that effect.
All right, well, you can motion at any time, but I'm going to move on to while you guys may just get the next representative.
Okay, so I just have two questions. First, I kind of want to challenge the people presenting to give me some tangible ways to think through this comic website will actually, cost effectiveness, because I tend to agree with Jeff Simon that I think the students are going to be going this website than me. I'm not going to join this club or that anything serious is going to happen falling a group being placed on the group's comic website. The second question I have is based on the comments that Gabriella made regarding the undergraduate and graduate teaching assistants. Delineation, I guess I'm just a little confused about what you meant with that, because I don't see that it's required by students to take this training. And so I don't understand why, undergraduate teaching assistants would be covered or something.
All right. So we have touched on all these points before, so I'm going to be brief. So to start out with, in terms of the group misconduct website, and I know that I've said this before, and we've all said this before, the group misconduct website has on their homepage, which I have pulled up right now, it says that it's to document, that's for the purpose of documenting instances where these student organizations fail to hold a high standard of conduct, which essentially means that they violate, unfortunately, academic code of conduct that they document here. The purpose of this piece of legislation, as by the title, Encouraging Community Standards and Accountability, is to encourage the standards that Cornell sets for itself, that it puts out on the internet for everyone to see, that it sets that these standards need to be recognized and need to be adhered to. I don't think that the conversation about whether or not this is whether this website is going to be truly a very incredibly useful website is as important as the conversation about whether or not the Cornell University should be held accountable to the standards that it sets for itself.
In regards to what Representative Sipinko was saying about encouraging people to view this website, I'd be willing to change in the legislation in saying that the student assembly makes sure that students are aware of this website, or that we would make sure that certain student groups understand this website exists. If you'd like to motion for something like that, sponsors would be finding that favorable.
I'm not taking the side of this. I just want to make sure that everybody's clear on the facts that are presented during this discussion. The group's conduct website was launched, we hope, correctly. I believe it was launched literally in the middle of the fall last semester. It was launched on softly, and then closer to the end of the semester, there was something article was signed. An editorial might have been president, but somebody wrote something that actually talked about the group's conduct website. So, when you're talking about effectiveness and who's going to use it, there were reasons that it was designed particularly for new students, parents, or to see whether students might potentially want to get involved in. There's a purpose that the website is launched, but I don't know if it's necessarily fair to kind of rate the sponsors for effectiveness of the website that has not been around for so long. But I just want to kind of clarify that. That was very private. Oh, I think it's helpful. So I'm not talking about this specifically, but it's in general, that's the fact. So everybody has the background on that website. And then some of the speakers is Brett Thompson. You might be able to see this.
So I guess I should start off by saying how sorry I am for something like that happened. You know, obviously, it was a little bit of a happening as well. I just had a couple of thoughts, I guess. First, quickly, I'm sure you said you started off, I guess, this like today, speaking about how, you know, this wasn't something that, you know, we were in front of, like, guide people towards, like, if they want to do a search out of the line, then just said that, like, you know, you can go here with the student assembly, then, like, Tom will go together, and just kind of wondering, like, what the objective is there. Also, if
you're putting into the mic,
sure, if we're putting Cornell Athletics on the website, and this is supposed to be a group misconduct website for what people can look at and see whether or not they want to join the organization, Cornell Athletics really isn't an organization to join. That's really just like something that people go to see. So I'm kind of wondering if that's the correct forum for a problem like this. It just seems like a very, very different like situation from what happened with us, specific fraternities and lacrosse team pacing. And I'm not really sure that we can compare those apples to apples, since I'll echo what Representative Ginger said with malicious intent, which I really don't think was there whatsoever. And I think that something needs to happen. I'm just not sure that this is the proper forum for doing something about it.
First of all, to kind of clarify where we're coming from in terms of malicious intent, this website is to document what happened. It's not the place of the student assembly to determine the motives of what was happening in the incident. We don't, as an assembly or as a university, we don't determine the motives of the group that sees. The group is the students, and that's what's happening, and then it's documented. That's what this website is doing. So I think it's not in our ethical standpoint to actually be debating malicious intent and whether or not something should go on. As well, Ezra's Army is a part of our athletics as we've talked about, and that's why it's supposed to be on the group misconduct page.
To further address, you know, this entire issue with malicious intent, even though the students did not do it purposely to hurt a number of students in the Cornell community, it happened, and it realized it was a violation. This is included in Respect at Cornell. It was a violation of Title IX, which includes discrimination. This was a discriminatory act, even though it wasn't done with a malicious intent, it was.
One more thing to clarify again, we've all had ample time by now to read this and go through that website, and I believe on the homepage of that website, closer to the bottom, it actually goes through in great detail. It lists, says, there's a list of, I don't know if you guys have it up, but it's a list of people or the groups that they will be documenting in there. It talks about student organizations, but it's not limited to student organizations. It mentions a lot of other.
Including but not limited to athletic teams, fraternities, sororities, university residences, and resident student organizations.
And in tandem on the UA, I think you guys brought this up on the UA, there is discussion right now. They're actually revisiting the resolution that actually launched this website because it talks about releasing particular information back into the community. So it's not just for student organizations, so just to clarify that. Great. Moving on, Representative Tulsa. BB Tulsa, sorry.
Thank you. And also thank you guys for coming here and really continue to pursue decision. I think that this legislation, based on the pretty highly erroneous assumption that more bureaucracy is the best way to solve issues, maybe they should do better results and restore to justice. And I think what you guys are doing really runs counter to everything that have a modern country from restore to justice advocate. I think that putting this group of pastors on the website, the exact same website that includes the lacrosse team that put kids in a room and forced them to chug beer, is not only ineffective, but also sort of ethically questionable. I do not think these are in any way the same sort of thing. And I think that the best way to pursue this is through restore to justice, in which you bring the two together to talk, and not just label one and have a problem happen. And I encourage you guys to approach me, or we should do it, working on a resolution right now to do just that. Thank you.
Just, I guess, to comment on dialogue with the student group, we actually did attempt a couple times to try to dialogue with them, and one of our members wasn't received very welcomely with the group, and when we tried to continue to pursue any kind of dialogue, the advisor couldn't just. So this is just an alternate way, and like we mentioned several times, we're not trying to chastise anyone, rather just document this incident. So I think that's what I'm doing.
Next one to speak with us is Katie Michelle.
Hi. First, I want to say thank you for coming here, and thank you for continuing to work to our solution. I just have a quick question. How much have you guys worked with the employee assembly, as well as GPSA, since those of you that are impacted by this? I'm wondering what their thoughts are on the effectiveness of it. Because to some degree, I agree with Fox, since it may not be the most effective, it is a step to help things for the data management system. So I'm curious as to what their thoughts were on the effectiveness and what their thoughts are on other options.
Basically, we've been working mainly in tandem with the GPSA, who wants to pass a resolution with very similar language to what we're passing, hopefully today, in the student assembly. They're very receptive. I'm talking with Christine, who's the Vice President of Operations, as well as the Diversity Committee, and we've been exchanging multiple emails, multiple conversations, and they're meeting January 27th, and they're meeting February 10th. To discuss this further, and we'll be attending those meetings, help guide them, and show them what we will be passing in the student assembly. So they're very engaged, and they're very interested in what we're doing, and believe that's a good way to go forward with this, and I think it's a very important step that needs to be taken. As we mentioned before, and I think we're on the same page as a step. As well, I'm going back to the other comment about this being an ethical sort of question. It's the reason why there's only a limited amount of things on this website is because it's new and it started softly in the fall. So being able to compare it to only a few incidents is not, I just don't see where that argument is actually coming from. What? We haven't, I haven't spoken to people in assembly.
I can say that when we did this update in the last UA meeting, the chair of the closing judicial committee, Greg, he did express perception to this and willingness to work. He's been otherwise occupied with the other way, so I did not connect
to you all, which is a lot of fun. But you guys will appreciate it. Moving on to the
So, for those of you who have not been on your Discotic webpage, the pilots aside infraction wasn't something that was ethical. It was a recruitment policy violation. So, like, truly, these are not, like there is a range of things that are going on here that range from a recruitment policy violation, which is just, like, they were talking members and they shouldn't have been talking members, to instances of hazing. So, keep that in mind when you're voting here and when you're thinking about what's going on here, that it truly is a range, and whether or not, you know, this should be documented in this forum, whether it fits in this forum, I think that's pretty clear that we see a pretty broad range of what's being documented, so it makes sense.
Hi guys, I just wanted to preface that I have never taken Respect at Cornell, but I did recently meet with the Office of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, and I guess for lack of a better word on my part, through the office they said that the program itself contains a lot of flamboyant examples of bias, but I was wondering what you guys are thinking about the more subtle forms of bias and how you guys would define bias, and I would really recommend that you guys add some sort of language to define bias in this resolution if you want to move forward with it. And I guess my second question, just to go back to lines 38-39, the part about the graduate teaching assistants, another thing that the office told me is that Respect at Cornell is geared towards faculty incidents. So I was wondering your thinking behind adding graduate teaching assistants to complete this program.
So we talked about this, and I think in every meeting we've talked to the graduate teaching assistants, every time we talked about this. The graduate teaching assistants were added and included because we felt that they were faculty-like in many settings. In particular, many of the intro classes have sections of offering graduate teaching assistants in which they should be treated like faculty.
Just how do you guys define bias, and how do you plan to, I guess, broadcast that definition to include more subtle forms of bias?
I'm going to draw upon the past, and I'm going to pull Ulysses almost when someone asked him last year to define diversity. I think that asking us to define bias with its multiple forms, as you said, from more subtle to more flamboyant, for lack of a better word, is very difficult to do. I think that what we're looking to do here is to just put something that happened in our community that was aggressive and offensive to a group of people on campus, to make sure that this is documented, to make sure that people know that this happened. We aren't here to determine the motives of the group. We aren't here to debate the ethical cause of it. It's to have documentation that this happened, and that we want to take a step to go further in the future about creating community standards and making sure that the community understands this conduct that happens on this campus, whether it's hazing, whether it's recruitment policies, whether it's creating a promotional material for a group that is offensive to a community on campus. That's what we're asking to do here today. And I think that's what everyone needs to keep in mind when we're passing this resolution.
Next is Representative.
Hi.
Hi. So I really like this. I'm kind of indifferent about the Respect at Cornell. But on bringing it out to the group's conduct, I think it's the student assembly's job to bring more whereabouts, because I think that if we're going to ask every student, you know, do you know the group's misconduct website is, or anything, does it to know? I think it's our job as SA members, voted by our peers, to bring more whereabouts about this website, you know, from a PR standpoint at least, because, you know, even if parents know, students have no idea what's going on. Even if it's available on the internet, I really think students need to actually know this exists, because putting it on there is one thing, but telling them when you see it is another thing. So I think that if anything can be added, or, you know, at least from a PR standpoint, I think it's our duty
if this resolution passes, that people know about the group misconduct website, and that we expand past the internet to more physical forms, you know, that anyone can see, and it be available to everyone.
Alright, moving on. Next is
Rebel. Hi guys, so I'd just like to say that I really like the mission. I really like, you know, how you want to create this awareness among the community. So I'm 100% with you there. But when I read it, the first question that came to mind was, is this the most effective way to handle this? And I feel like nearly all the assembly members have, in their own way, asked this question. And I think that I'm still not convinced that this is going to be effective. To use a specific example, I know that especially when we came in with the Hackstick alcohol education course, it was online videos with all the scientific data, but I'm doubtful that that influenced drinking behavior among freshmen. So I guess if we want this to be successful, we need to be effective. And I just want to know why you feel this is an
effective way to do it. This is not directly towards you, but I think we've had about 6 or 7 members of the assembly saying, is this the most effective way to go about this? This resolution has been passed, was proposed on November 4th. That was multiple months ago. If you had a more effective way to go about this, because I believe from Vic's and my viewpoint that this is the most effective step to take to go towards the future, we would have, maybe it's a fault on our part, but we should be getting those responses from you in ways to make it more effective. You guys have had multiple months to think about this, and if this was the most effective way to go about things. And if you would want to tell me a different, or tell us a different way to go about this, this was your chance to say so. And I think that from our viewpoint, this is the most effective step, and that's why we brought this forward to the assembly many different times.
But once again, there was no mention as to why it's the most effective, exactly. And this is your resolution, so it's kind of your job to put forward an effective way. Could you substantiate why not say it is effective?
Yeah, sure. So why do you think this is effective? This is a website that has started recently, and it's gaining momentum. It's something that targets the community, and it answers the question about what is happening on campus and what certain groups are doing in terms of misconduct. I think that it's effective because it exists, and it's taking a step to actually physically document these things for the interest of people actually know that it happened on campus.
Just so you know, I'm clarifying how things come up constantly that aren't necessarily true.
And it's also been a while since we've talked about things,
exactly.
So I understand.
So respect at Cornell was something that was initiated by the Office on Workforce Diversity and Inclusion. They have a goal of having everyone in the Cornell community take it, which includes undergraduate students. If you go on the website, there is a counter that breaks down by constituency who has taken. Or how many people in those constituencies have taken the actual course. It's just a first step, it is not the end-all, be-all, but they're, I think as Gabriel would say earlier, they're not trying to run their sponsors seem to be looking to add to. You don't ask for more resources to create something new. They're using something that already exists, they just ask more people to take it. The graduate TA part was added during the succeeding meeting when this was being reviewed by a graduate student who sits on that committee. Just so we're all clear on that. Everybody good. Great. So, and I'm looking at the last part of this resolution, by the way. Every time I see it says something about using the constituent assemblies and everything to revisit things and enhance these programs and such. So it sounds to me that the union is saying there's a step, the sponsor is saying there's a step, and there's not. Just this isn't the end thing. So it's not looking at punitive measures. Read what's on the websites. Of incidents, and it's not, it just talks about what happened. Literally, it's thoroughly done. This is what happened at the end. So, no way to say much. Next is DOE. Thank you for the time, Bill Season. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. And I'm also talking to you. I've seen this before as a member of the general organization about 4 or 5 years ago, and I've seen most. As a senior, I'm finding a lot of parallels in what you're talking about and what the arguments were at that time. The arguments being that if we document something online, let everyone see it, that
that the incidences of hazing will stop. As I think a lot of people in this room would agree, they haven't. If anything, they've gotten worse. The website just hasn't worked. And if the website did work, we might not need this site because we'd still be on hazing.oml.edu. So instead, we're creating a new site for something, obviously a different issue. The bias is not hazing, it is a different issue. But you know, why is the process on this website when it could be on hazing.oml.edu? Because hazing isn't working. Hazing.oml.edu is not working. The point being that I echo off the Russell and Lady, I don't think this is a solution because we have rejected precedent of this kind of solution failing to address the problem.
Yeah, so my question is about the difference between documenting an incident versus a group, because I guess, like, for instance, if it's a lacrosse team put on the website for, like, their hazing incident, or would put on, like, as a group, and I'm really just not sure how, like, you could put an incident on, like, a group misconduct website.
So when you're on the website, there's incident reports, and each group has an incident report, So if you go on the website, you can go to the incident report section when an incident is filed, and then it's published, it documents the group at the top, and then it gives a description of the incident as well as the outcome of the incident. So you're documenting an incident that a group that happened between a group and a violation of the academic or our academic code. So I don't know if that addressed your question, but.
Well, I guess part of that is like then why wasn't like Cornell Cross put on the incident like list for like a hazing incident? Or I just don't understand how you choose to put it on like as a group or as like the incident.
When Cornell Varsity Cross is put on there, it's called, you know, men's Varsity Cross team. So, I'm not really sure what
you're asking.
Okay, thank you. Next, where does it
come from?
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. Next is where does it
all right, so I have a few things. Whenever I write a blog about whether or not this being the most effective solution, like, this is not usually exclusive to other action or pursuing the other dialogue that exists on campus. Like, just because passing minutes doesn't mean that you stop everything or you stop answering the dialogue. This is more or less a starting point. Objectively speaking, the misconduct that took place, which broken codes, should be documented. This is all that they're asking at this point. I think it's perfectly fair, objectively speaking, that, like, this should be documented. It is not mutually exclusive to other action. And I think if you think this is not the most effective, you have other ideas, pass this, come forward with more effective solutions and work with them to book them. Don't just sit there and tell them it's not effective. And then sit back home and do nothing. I support this resolution, and I hope you do too.
Next. Well, that exchange is the first speaker's list. So anyone who does not have a chance to speak on the first speaker's list, I wish this is the second speaker's list. Great, seeing none. Next is, next on the second speaker's list is Ubi Block. Sorry. I'm sorry, is there somebody in the community that had a question? Oh, I apologize. Please come up before you keep going. Come on, yeah, come right up. Speak into the mic, so you got it.
Okay, so there's an organization on campus called Cornell David Sun, and they sometimes actually go over these, and they actually, I'd say they have their analysis of the hazing events, and I'd say that they have better coverage than the misconduct website. And I'm curious how this fits in relationship to outside organizations that achieve some of the same goals or pursue some of the same goals.
I guess my answer to your question would be to have a real life sort of be there for a longer period of time is somewhere that a student can go to see the outcome. I don't know necessarily if it's also regularly updates what the outcomes of every event is, but I think something institutionalized within Cornell on their website would be probably a better way, a more reliable way for a student to be able to check up on what happened. Because I know, like you mentioned, one of our friends did file a bias incident, and thus far has not received any communication about it. So.
I want to invite the Sun to the event. The Sun is a business, it's an independent organization, it's not an on campus thing. Just everybody goes.
I think to speak more closely to that, the Sun is an independent organization. I think that it's worth having Cornell echo some of the same things, because it's Cornell holding itself accountable, and this is on the Cornell community. And while the Sun has not, is run by members of the Cornell community, it as an organization is not as separate from Cornell University. And I don't think that I would want the Cornell Daily Sun to be reporting for Cornell University. I think Cornell should actually duplicate with their own message.
If you want to go ahead.
I think Representative Hudson's absolutely correct. The actions that we take today are not mutually exclusive with anyone else's. I think the question we should be asking is, does this harm their efforts? I would be shocked if there's a single person in this room that thinks that alcohol is being used effectively. Is there anyone? Surprise. I think that at the end of the day, we're talking about this isn't like mutually exclusive with that, sure, but I think that this sort of training has not worked. I think that Kiwi kind of touched on that. I sit on the NCHIP meetings along with BB Val, and what we've seen is that the websites that Cornell has set up to document what is bad ways to drink are visited by very few of any students every month. And I think that when you advocate this position, you say, this is the action that we're going to take, and it is completely ineffective. I'm sorry, but I really don't think students are ever going to be affected by a website that says, as is on me, whatever this organization is, which apparently doesn't even exist as an official organization. So now we're saying, don't join this organization that you can't join because it's not an organization. But where's the effectiveness in that? And I really feel like we have an opportunity to work on this issue. We have many members of this assembly who are willing to push and work on this issue. And we're going to sit here and we're going to say, let's make students look at a one-hour video. And having taken that video, that you see in class, which has videos and readings and things like that, it's not effective. And I really think that at the end of the day, we're mandating that all these thousands of staff members and graduate TAs take a class and use their time for something that we don't know the effectiveness of. And I really strongly disagree with the argument that it is not our job to debate the effectiveness of this because it's new. Because when the student assembly takes a position on something that's wholly ineffective, for example, if this assembly was to come out and say, we think alcohol EDU is a fantastic program, it hurts our legitimacy. When we try to take efforts in other communities, when we try to work on other issues, and students look at us and they say, well, they advocate this position, which is wholly ineffective, how are they going to take it seriously? I really don't think any single one of you would ever say that the online educational programs are not effective. And I don't think this one's any different. I think we should continue to contact our people and who are involved in this issue, but there's so many other ways in online education. This isn't going to work. I'm going to vote no on this, and let's find a real solution.
Thank you. And next on the speaker's list is Brett Stefanko.
So I'll first start with that I completely agree with Julian and Kevin that obviously more can be done, but I also agree with Jeff that I don't think that saying that this is the best solution, which seems to be what Juliana and Nick are saying is the best solution, is the right thing to do. I think Jeff did a pretty good job explaining why he doesn't think that the respect to Cornell portion of this plan is a good idea. I kind of want to just comment on the group misconduct website. I think you guys have been having a lot of generic answers and saying, we've talked about this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I think the reason why it keeps coming up is that I don't think there's really been a good answer, and I think the reason for that is that I don't think that this violation should necessarily go on the group misconduct website. First of all, when I look at it, it says that it should include registered student organizations, athletic teams, fraternity sororities, and university graduate residences, which either Cornell Athletics or Ezra's Army fit under. It does say but not limited to, but that, I mean, you can converge it to really anything. It doesn't quite make a whole lot of sense for that. And the second thing, and this is what I was trying to make before, is it says, who is this site for? The site is a resource primarily for students who are considering joining a student organization or team, as well as other individuals interested in gathering complete information. If that's the intent of the website, and you think putting this thing on the website, my question still stands. Do you think students are actually going to look at this website? And if the intent of the website is to do that, and I currently do not think that it's filling one intent, then I'm really skeptical of why we even need to put this on here, but I don't even think it should be on here in the first place. And that's what I'm trying to get an answer
from, and you guys just keep being back, and we'll talk about this over and over again. So.
Just FYI, I'm actually going to close up the session because it seems to be pretty repetitive. I'm going to give you guys a couple minutes to close and then bring it in because we've gone way over the time budgeted for this and everything seems to be exactly the same. All kind of comments, so go ahead.
I'd just like to dismantle once and for all this constant comparison of this resolution to alcohol-wise, of respect that we're not comparing it to alcohol-wise. Because drinking, whatever you do, that is your personal choice. But offending other students and committing an act of discrimination or harassment is not. It is not a right of anyone to do so. And that is why you can't compare these two things together. Whether alcohol-wise was effective or not is because of a personal choice. But this is something that is going to hold an organization accountable for their actions. If you were told freshman year that if you were caught drinking, that it would be documented on your transcript, I can almost promise you that a lot of students would not have done so, and there would be many more cases, many less cases of alcohol poisoning on this campus.
Representative Spinko, one last comment in relation to what you said. I think what we have to think about here is that we're here for 4 years. As student leaders, we're really close to what happened, and as students on campus, we saw what happened, or we understood from what happened to us. But this is a website that transcends all of us. So when we leave here in 4 years, this website will hopefully still be existing and it will still have the documentation of what happened. And when we leave, our knowledge is not here anymore, but the website that has the documentation of what happened will still be existing. I think that's what's the important thing to remember.
And I think this should just point about wasting students' time. There's no undergraduate students who will be required to take this anymore. I think they'll be encouraged. I mean, of course, universities encourage you to have it, but the goal is that, and the goal of the program is that all students will take it, but this resolution is asking that all graduate student TAs, as well as faculty members, take it. So really, we're asking people who should be held accountable to a standard, who may not understand that standard, to become familiar with the standard that we as Cornell put across to ourselves concerning diversity issues so that we can better ourselves and be better aware of when instances like the reduction rates may be offensive to a certain group of population and be able to be have the education in the background to listen there and say, this sort of thing is not appropriate and should be stopped. That's what we're asking here. It's not a waste of time. It's about people who have been employed by the university, who have been asked to take the next step of being a leader, being in a position of power, where they are making decisions about hosting events like this.
Lastly, just to echo Nick, why it's not a waste of time of a 1 hour. Realize, please, that a lot of us students that come from underrepresented communities are often burdened with the job of teaching the rest of the community how not to offend us, how not to discriminate and harass us, because most of the times, as was mentioned, it's not with malicious intentions, but it happens. This lessens the burden for a very big part of the Cornell community.
Great, that's time. So I'm actually going to do a call for questions.
Second in.
I was going to do it anyway, using the standard rules of voting. But so we're actually just going to go, I'm just going to do a simple hand vote, just because I think that'll be easier for everyone to do. Please remember that this is a recommendation. Can you wait up? Remember that this is a recommendation. It is not an act of legislation, and so it's not a mandate. Nobody's being mandated to do it. It's a recommendation from the assembly to the appropriate bodies. This is going to, that's clear. So first people who are going to vote in the community, then we will vote. What is your question? What information? Sorry? A roll call vote if you want. Fine. Brian, is that going to be hard for you? I guess. So that doesn't change. I'll laugh like that doesn't change. If it was going to make it more difficult for me, I don't want to do it. Alright, so first community members, collectively, all those in favor of voting yes, in favor of Resolution 19, members who vote yes on Resolution 19, please raise your hand. That includes me too. Alright, so we
So by voting 7-1, the two community votes are allocated in favor of the resolution. Now we're going to go through a roll call vote. Brian, whenever you're ready.
Clarification?
Yeah.
How do their votes, is it, do they get 7 yeses?
No. So the community gets 2 elected votes. So the majority in that sense, there's a, talk about it in the bylaws, but I think the majority in that sense is allocated to elected. So there's only 2 yes votes in this case. There'll be 2 yes votes toward the total amount of votes on the resolution. Make sense?
For information, what is the parliamentary procedure for this recommendation passing?
She went over that at the beginning, but it's just a majority vote, same as the system of the ballot.
Okay. I'm just going to do last name. Khan.
Yes.
Balik. Batista. Bhandari.
Abstain.
Locke.
No.
Bonatti. Chen. Drucker. Gadaminsky. Thank you. Harris. Oh, he's not here, sorry. Henderson?
No.
Hittinger?
No.
Hudson?
Yes.
Liu? Lukasiewicz?
No.
Lukasiewicz, thank you. Lutzik? Ma? Maletti?
No.
Smith?
No.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I forgot. I wasn't even looking for his name. Stefanko? Fonko? Talbot? And he's not here. Thompson? Tulski? Wershaw? Zhao. Yes.
Oh, lucky. Okay. Lucky because there's a rule about the number of abstentions in my 2008 schedules. Just kidding. Next, so by vote of 5 to 12 to 6, the resolution does not pass. But maybe a little supplementary. Sorry, guys.
Thank you all for attending.
We're going to move right into 604. We got it here. We're going to move right on into resolution 29, which is the last one, our last item on the agenda for today. It's a new business. Rep. Henderson, Jordan, if you want to take it away.
Student-supported debt grant improvements is a recommendation that will require a majority vote of the SA members present to pass.
Hello, everyone. I'm here with Matthew Sepenko and Anna Johnston from the Community Wide Committee. We're here to present Resolution 29, Student-Supported Debt Grant Improvements. And this resolution has a couple of 3 different things that we're trying to get accomplished with CIT and the departments that use NEPRIN. I'll start with the first one, which is a dual pricing scheme for NEPRIN. As some of you probably know, NEPRIN currently has a 9 cents per side pricing system, where say you print a 10-page document, you're going to get a single side deal of 10 different pages, it will be 90 cents, 9 times 10. And if you print double-sided, you'll have 5 different pieces of paper, same price for 90 cents. So really, this disincentivizes people to print double-sided, and it's still costing CIT more money because one of those printing jobs is going to have 5 pieces of paper, one's going to have 10 pieces of paper. So we really just want to reward people and incentivize people to print double-sided. So kind of what we envisioned was having a pricing scheme where you could have 9 cents for the front side of a piece of paper and a lower price for the back side of a piece of paper. And so say you're printing a 10-page document, then with double-sided, you have 5 pages on the front times 9 cents, and then 5 pages in the back at a lower cost. And so the most obvious obstacles for this, were the CIG software and the lost revenue for the departments that do get this revenue. And when I say departments, it's a Mann Library, Goldman Smith, and Parkland Sciences, PAM that has their own print, the PAM department that has their own printer. But so one of the obstacles being the software adjustments. And what I heard from CIG was that it would take a lot of expense to implement something like this in the short term. However, they plan software upgrades in the near future, which would make this much easier to accomplish. And thus, we're trying to really push for this kind of change so that it is possible at one point. And it's probably not going to be anytime soon just because of those costs, but we really need to be on the radar for those changes in the future. The other thing that was concerned was, like I said, the lost revenue would be for the departments. One thing we heard was that the 9 cents per page, that's been true since inception. And what I heard from Joanne Button, CIG, was since they haven't raised that price since its inception, it's kind of evidence that there is wiggle room with those rates, and that it was kind of an arbitrary starting price. Meaning that the costs were much lower than they expected, and there are a lot of departments that are making money from NetPrint as now, which really wasn't the intent of the program. I would entertain a motion to extend it as long as possible. And so our plan was to have a 9 cents, 7 cents, a 9 cents to the front and a 7 cents to the back kind of spread. And we're hoping that that will have the same kind of effect that pricing plastic bags did and reduce paper and so that. And so now I'm going to hand it off to
I am Emma. The other part of the resolution is that we want to encourage the departments to buy 100% recycled paper as opposed to green paper. It would end up being less than a cent difference per piece of paper for them to do this. For the packages that they buy, which are 2,500 sheets, it's $51.59 versus $28.77, which sounds like a lot, but when you divide by that many sheets of paper, it's pretty insignificant. The majority of the cost of printing is actually for like the toner and the printer upkeep. So changing to the same paper would be a good thing to do now, since the software updates will take a while. It's something that we can do as soon as possible, because it just takes time to the departments usually.
Then just to kind of go forward,
10 seconds.
I want to thank Matt and Emma for the extensive amount of work that they've done on this. At least on my part, for the Community Life Committee, one of the things that we're going to do if this resolution is passed is to actually take these letters and first send them to all the different departments that have accounts, and then additionally meet with them. I'm using just people from the committee to actually try to customize some of these changes for each department. So I know that's something that Representative Drucker spoke to me about, but actually speaking to individual departments to see if they can do more than kind of the baseline stuff. That's nice.
Push pause. All assembly members outside the door, I need you to come in the memorial room at this time. Who's there now? That means VP Tulsi, whoever else is standing out there with you, we are voting. Now, sorry about that. All right, so we're going to go on for opening speeches. First up is VP Block. Speaking time on this is limited to 30 seconds. Remember, this is new business and it's not open for debate. And I'd be argumentative in nature.
Changing the number. I guess my only question is now, and I'm going to revolve, but if, as was explained earlier, toner ink is the biggest cost for these printing, how are we really going to affect the price of all the reduce is the much lesser cost of paper. You kind of get what I'm saying. Basically, we're trying to go from single-sided to double-sided, but we all know that ink is extremely more expensive per page than is the paper.
Yeah, so like in bringing the price down from 9 cents to 7 cents, part of that is paper, like part of that's justified by paper, and some of it's just bringing down the price in double-sided since it was kind of an overestimate when they first set the prices. So in part, it's giving people the discount that they deserve, because like probably the true price that should be is 9 cents and 8.5 cents. So the extra paper costs half a cent. But like I said, part of this is just trying to lower costs for students in general.
That's fine. I'm doing 30 seconds. It's a new business, so it's not great. You'll have time next week. Next is Representative Drucker.
Hi. So I spoke to Matt before, but something I recommend on this resolution was the cost of plotting. Now, this probably only came from my college, but in the AP college, it costs $15 to plot any size sheet or $20 on paper. At Syracuse University, it costs $125 per square feet. And at Buffalo, it costs around 66 cents per square feet. And in the Human College School, I was told it's free, but I can't confirm that. I would just like to add to be part of this resolution, because I tried going to the IT department, and I tried to ask them to reevaluate their numbers, and they kind of pushed me off to the side.
Sure. Can I respond? Yeah. So we certainly talked after the meeting. Like I said before, anything that's kind of department specific, I don't know if I'm super comfortable like putting in the resolution, but we can work on that and see if we can either put it in the letter or figure something out after.
College initiative. Don't worry, I'm right there with you. I hate it. We'll talk. We can ask you about planning after the meeting. Don't worry. Next is David Lucia. Next is Representative.
I'd like to first say what a fantastic job you guys have done on this, and each one of you have, so I fully support it. I'd also like to ask, inquire whether there is even data to potentially lower the backside cost, the double-sided cost further, because given that up to now it's an equivalent pricing for, printing single on the single side versus the double side, whether there's not even an incentive to print double-sided hardly ever, and whether saving the paper for these people will, in fact, so whether the fact that they will be consuming much closer to half the amount of paper will somehow save the money if you look at it.
Yeah, so the reason why we chose 7 cents was we thought it was far enough down that we thought students would actually participate in it, and then if we went any further, then it would be tough to convince the departments, because they are taking a revenue loss any place after 8.5 cents or whatever that is. And so we tried to find some balance kind of running the numbers, so that's the best guess that we have, honestly.
Yeah, the main thing was the revenue, because like if you look at the 9 million signs that are printed, it's like probably $1 million in revenue. So really just not taking too big of a hit into the department's revenue.
Great. Thanks. Next is Rep. Hudson.
So I just want to let the rest of the assembly know that by sitting on the Community Life Committee, I've seen the work that Representative Henderson is the banker. And Emma have done with this resolution, and it's taken them a long time going over and researching, everything that print the details about printing. And this resolution and this initiative is definitely the best that it's going to be based on all the research that they've done already. So just to let you guys know.
Great. Yep, there's a point of order. It's questions or comments, it's obviously not argumentative in nature.
Can I motion to move it to business of the day so that we can...
I'm not going to contain that, actually, because we only have 15 minutes left. Never mind. Go ahead, make a motion. There's a motion to move it to business of the day. It's the second of 13%.
Personally, I think there's still things that we can talk about. I think had a good point on the plotting, I believe it's called. I don't think it's a necessity we need to pass today. A couple of things we want to do, including an exact session to kind of get us back in the semester.
Great, that seems like it's amazing. Want to throw or keep up?
Let's go.
All right, motion is withdrawn. Next on the description.
I just have a question. And looking at this, it seems like the
stuff. So I got some questions. Have you guys looked into the cover page that comes with that print, which includes like the NID and everything? That's something that I know is supposed to recycle with next printers. So if we want to look into that, I don't know if that would be a software change or if that would decrease costs.
Yeah, as far as I know, the cover page is no longer the default option and now, so it should be a watermark on everyone's accounts. I'll definitely talk to you after the meeting because it shouldn't be the way that the cover page is the automatic setting, because a couple years back some students changed that and introduced the watermark and I think made that the default setting.
Next on the speakers list is Brett Warshaw.
Hi, so I have a question for you. If this resolution is passed, how are you planning on coding this so that it is effective and that students should take advantage of the technical side, as well as how long this is going to take to be implemented, for example, in the software you all set up and to get the recycled slash used paper to make up the cost.
Okay, well, so I'll just start with the software upgrades. I mean, so a lot of the software upgrades, they do happen over summer. Yeah, so that would likely be the time in which those software upgrades would occur if this passes. So if we were to pass this, at least on the software end, we would approach the IT and any departments and tell them that we wanted to get plans for the summer.
Yeah, and is there going to take some promotion to tell people that the prices have changed? Because this is something that it's not like CIT commands the price for all the different printers. Some printers may choose to have the 9 cents, 7 cents, and others may say 9 cents. But I think it does make a lot of sense to do some publicity and promotion in the stocks where the printers are, especially the first years.
That's fine. And just to note, anything from now on as a sort of PR plan, anything that's passed will be with the PR team that is in the PR will be able to work on strategy with that team. Next is Usman Tulsi. I love the work you guys have done on this. I think it's a really good idea. Definitely a great goal of mine. Just speak of moving tax, macroeconomics. Why not treat it as such and actually treat it as such and increase from 0.09 to 9 cents to 12 cents instead of dropping to 7 cents? Because that way you're not actually helping with the cost up, you're actually making a little money and then hopefully up 6.9.
So Netform was created to not make revenue. It's supposed to help the students out. So we don't want to really increase costs because it's probably going to upset people. And right now they're making more money than they probably should be anyways. So increasing the cost is just going to make them make more money. And not want people to feel about that.
Great. That's next is the other
questions. So they're making right now about $1 million in profit and they in revenue. And how much are they making in profit?
You know? That hasn't been disclosed, but they've said that there is room for lowering it. That's why we started a 9 cents, 7 cents spread rather than a 9 cents, 5 cents or something.
Okay, so is there like where they're gonna break even? Is it like 8 cents a piece ish?
You mean for single sided and double sided?
Yeah.
We don't know. We have to go to further discussions with them. They would disclose that, and so I think they don't want to disclose that they'd rather just have. And I guess it changes for each department. Like the financials aren't very centralized, so like man could be breaking even, other ones could be losing money.
And I think that's a discussion that would happen when we meet with these departments, like what is the revenue you're making, how much of a hit can you take, and then maybe adjusting from there, right? Like if they're willing to take a bigger revenue hit, like you could do 9 cents or 5 cents or something like that, but it's tough to know through CIT. That's perfect. Last of speech, this is Brett and Darcy.
I just had a question about the effectiveness. So have you guys spoken to CIT's Netform division? How do they feel about the pricing changes? Would they be open to it, or is it just something that's still open for discussion?
So Emma and I spoke to the head of the CIT labs, and he had said that he thought it would be cool idea to reduce paper consumption once it was available. But other than that, that's going to be part of the conversations with all of the individual departments to see if they're open to having that kind of a pricing system, because Like, as of now, there's around 9 cents, 7 cents, and there's nothing that's differential rates. So that's really our
a motion.
Yeah.
I move that we table this. It sounds like there's still a number of things that people want to talk to them about. Let's do it offline. It looks like a great resolution, but I think we get a little bit more talk on next week. Bring it back to you.
Let's get a motion to table until next week. So the second is already consent. Seeing none, and this is the last item on our agenda, this is motion, or this is table until next week. It'll be open for a full debate, discussion, and some comments, the time period, maybe long.
And we're going to stay for a few minutes after, just talk to us after. Yeah. After exec.
That sounds good. Exec will be brief, don't you guys already? Right, so sounds good. Seeing as we've expired the items on our agenda for today, I'm going to adjourn the meeting now at 6:21.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.